this podcast series, devised and hosted by me, David Roth, and in collaboration with ANU, the Museum of the Jewish People, that's so much more than a museum. ANU is a unique global institution that helps bind the Jewish community by telling the ongoing, extraordinary and unique story of the Jewish people. In this special Passover broadcast series, I talk to our guests about their individual stories and who, from history or living today, they'd like to invite as their Passover Seder service guest. To find out more about this series, go to mysederguest.com, but not before you've listened to this. Joining us in this episode of our podcast series is Staff Sergeant Dan Fox, the National Chair of AJAX, the Jewish Military Association of Great Britain. Thanks very much indeed for joining me, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
With over 120,000 Jews having served amongst the British Armed Forces during the World Wars, AJAX JMA is there to ensure that their immense contribution is never forgotten. Their aims are simple: to create remembrance of the Jewish contribution to the military, to combat anti-Semitism through education, and to provide welfare for Jewish veterans and their families. Dan was elected AJAX National Chair in 2021. Dan joined the Army Reserve, then called the Territorial Army, in September 2006, and was mobilised into the regular army for a year in July 2009, including a six-month operational tour of Afghanistan. He remains a reservist, serving at least 30 days a year in uniform alongside his day job. Nearly every Jewish family in the UK from every part of the community has a connection with AJAX JMA. Through a parent, grandparent, great-grandparent, or other relatives who helped secure freedom. If you can help set the scene for us, how many Jewish service people are there in the UK forces?
So that's a good question. Currently serving, we take the sort of full sweep through regular and reserves, we certainly know about sort of 200 or 300 who, if you like, are active as serving personnel and also practice or observe in some way, promote and feel a Jewish identity. Now, there are probably about another 200 or 300 as well that haven't come across any of the official bodies yet, or for them, their sort of Jewish lives are separate from their military lives. So the estimates are around sort of probably about 500 or 600, and that's about right. That would put Jews in the same proportion in the UK armed forces as we are in the general population of the UK.
Was serving in the military something you always wanted to do?
It really wasn't. I mean, growing up, I had no interest in any of sort of the uniformed youth organisations whatsoever, not even the Scouts or JLGB. I was probably a little bit too independent-minded for that as a kid. I always had an interest in the military from a sort of historical and political perspective. But in terms of sort of community life, I was very involved in my own Jewish youth movement, my own tenua, all the way through from a chanich as a nine-year-old through to helping to run it as a madrich in my early 20s. But around 2005, I was looking to do some volunteer youth and community work again. And in the area where I was then living, in inner London, one of the main opportunities for that was a local army cadet force unit. So I made a few inquiries, and before I knew it, I was playing soldiers a couple of times a week, weekends and longer camp. And to my surprise, found that I really enjoyed it. As an adult instructor, the simulation of army life was quite fun, and I loved, again, sort of being able to work with young people. It brought me into, really for the first time properly in my life, into the orbit of the regular and reserve forces too, including a reserve unit that was also quite close to where I was living. So in September 2006, I joined up as a reservist, as a unit in what was then called the Territorial Army. And 3 years later, having sort of completed training and sort of come to a natural stop with my civilian career, I deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months to Helmand Province.
How difficult is it to balance a civilian job with a military job?
I mean, it depends very much on your employers. Many employers these days are part of the Armed Forces Covenant, which includes giving support to and particular time off and recognition of people who are also serving in the military reserve, whether Army, Navy, or or Air Force. It is a challenge to work-life balance. I think probably for me, having started a family more recently, that's probably the bigger challenge to trying to balance with life as a reservist than my actual civilian career.
What is Jewish military life?
There are a number of organisations that sort of help look after Jewish servicemen and women. The oldest and sort of most official one is the Jewish Committee for Her Majesty's Forces, which was set up in 1947. It's kind of the official devolved body from the Ministry of Defence, and it oversees the Jewish chaplaincy. And we have three and an increasing number of Jewish military chaplains, Jewish military rabbis, and things like kosher ration packs, any kind of official event within the military. The celebration of the festivals. Alongside that, we have a more sort of, if you like, kind of shop floor organisation, the Armed Forces Jewish Community, which is the, again, an officially sort of recognised representative body for those that are serving and is, you know, very involved in discussions with the military around diversity and inclusion, the needs of Jewish men and women who are in the forces. And then my organisation, Ajax, supports not just those veterans and their families, but those serving as well. If you can sort of imagine what Jewish life is like as a civilian, you have your various organisations you're involved with might organise various events around Jewish holidays or various socials around the Jewish community and people that are there. It's the same in the military. That culture of observance, events, of getting together to eat and see each other exists within the Jewish military community as well. But that's obviously a very small community in and of itself.
Dan, tell us a little bit about your early Passover memories as a child.
So I think my earliest memories really go back to my grandparents' house. You know, the first night, the first Seder, the family squeezed round the dining table. You know, me, my parents, my sister, my cousins, my aunts and uncles, a few great aunts and uncles, and maybe some, you know, sort of random visitors as well. The noise, the arguments, the politics, the jokes, but an awful lot of love as well. And of course, as a kid, Passover, and even as an adult, I think it remains my favourite festival just for the intricacies of it and the variety of it and everything that you get to do. The reading of the Haggadah, and again, growing up, you know, just that idea of every year the Haggadahs that have been in the family for however long that then actually became part of my own personal history with the Haggadahs that you got for your bar mitzvah and things like that. Having that connection to family going back for, you know, however many decades, but also to all the friends and family that were with you at that time, just made it very special. And then, of course, the moment that I most remember every year the same thing, sort of towards the end of the Haggadah reading or in between one of the courses being served, my grandpa begging my grandma to go and get a pillow for his back because his back was hurting, that he then stuck behind him. And of course, that's where the Afikoman went. And that's where we all had to look and search for it, whether we remembered it from the previous year or not.
Did you ever spend Seder on a military base?
I did, yes.
Hiding the Afikoman in a military base must be a lot of fun.
But what actually happened was I was on a military base again. This is back in Afghanistan. I was on a British military base. We were right next door to a US Marine base. Again, from the chaplaincy, we had a message come down saying we recognised that it's sort of Seder. And this was the Jewish chaplain. This was the Royal Army Chaplain's Department. This was them recognising the need to ministrate to their Jewish personnel who were in Afghanistan at the time. We can try and organise a Seder for you. I responded, and what they'd actually done is set us up, and it was just me going across to the US Marine base where the rabbi, Irving Elson, who was eventually the deputy rabbi for the armed forces in America, was then the rabbi for the 7th Marines, and he was holding a Seder over there. And so I went along, I found the chaplaincy over at their base, and we had 12 people, I think. So we made minion, and there were some converts there. There were some people that had come along, I think, because they were just interested, weren't Jewish themselves. And we had a Seder. The point at which it came to reading the Haggadah out, I ended up having to read the whole thing because they loved the British accent so much. They insisted that I completed the story without it going on to anybody else. I think it was quite the whole thing, but it was a good, more of a section than you would normally have got. And then at the end, again, this is everything you'd expect. They gave me a huge food parcel that had come in, a huge Pesach food parcel. The box was, I was sort of almost struggling to carry it, and which was just full of chocolate-covered matzah, just the most ridiculous things that I was, you know, I sort of returned back to my own unit, sort of carrying this thing and saying, you're going to have to help me get through this. So it was a really, really great experience. And I was very grateful for both my own chain of command and the chain of command of our allies for having set that up.
So lots of matzo crumbs all over the base then. So there's a knock on the door, and you're just about to start your Seder, and your guest from Jewish history, yeah, past or current, is standing on your doorstep. Mm-hmm. When you open it, Dan, who is it?
Who's there? My main interest within Jewish military history is the Jewish men and women who served in the Special Operations Executive during World War II. This was the clandestine organisation where people were parachuted into Nazi-occupied territories, countries, to help build resistance networks, to carry out sabotage, propaganda, espionage, all sorts of things that just helped to undermine the Nazi war effort in advance of, especially in advance of D-Day. Jews, because of their immigrant and refugee background, were well disposed to this sort of work because they had local knowledge, cultural knowledge, language skills, and all sorts of other things going on. So you had Jews from Britain, you had Jews who had escaped from Nazi-occupied countries and come to Britain, and you also had Jews from the Yeshuv, all signing up for the SOE and then deploying. I mean, literally jumping, they were normally deployed by parachute, jumping into the jaws of Nazism, in the case of some of them, jumping back into the jaws of Nazism, having escaped in the first place. Many of them did incredible work over there, incredible bravery, and of course, not many of them actually survived. Because so many Jewish women particularly were involved in F Section, which covered France, which was the biggest operation, the memorial to F Section at the National Memorial Arboretum is a bench in the shape of a Mogen David, because people recognise how great the Jewish contribution was to some aspects of the SOE.
I think many people will be amazingly surprised to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. My ideal guests would be to have that Seder dinner as a reunion dinner, a regimental dinner, for the Jewish members of the Special Operations Executive, alive or dead.
Clearly would be an amazing evening. You probably won't have time to read most of the Haggadah with,
well, maybe
with
not,
all,
maybe
all
not,
those people around there. But what would you ask them, Dan?
I'm a trained soldier. I've been operations. You know, in terms of World War II, you know, we've all read so much and seen the films, fictional and historical. If I really try, I think I can just about imagine what it must have been like to land on a Normandy beach, or to patrol through a Belgian forest, or to jump into a Dutch city. But to do what these guys did, to have to be permanently switched on, permanently at risk of being found out, permanently having essentially be on the move, have your wits about you, both have the physical and intellectual strength to do it, and just to have the courage as Jews to have deployed and be operated in this way, I just want to try and understand what that felt like and where the courage came from. And I think that's what I'd ask them.
Where do you think, Dan, in your experience, courage does come from? Is that something that you're born with? Is it an instinct when the situation arises? Is that something that you'll get taught?
I think it comes from, and some people are naturally more this way than others, and for some it's learned, but it comes from a selfless commitment. It comes from putting yourself before others. When you're in a war zone or in a conflict or some other, if you like, violent situation, it's about putting your mates first, essentially. I think that's where it comes from. It's, people talk about, you know, king or queen and country, or they talk about some great ideology. But actually, I think in those situations, it comes from recognizing that you'd want your friends to be showing courage alongside you. And so you also want to show it alongside them. In World War II, with these guys, I say the SOE and you know, those people landing on beaches with bullets flying into them, does come from recognizing that you're fighting for something that's right as well. And with that comes high morale, and with high morale comes high courage.
Dan, do you think there's something that is highly significant about Passover in relation to the military, the whole concept of from slavery to redemption, and the role of the military, clearly not out of Egypt, but the role, sure, of the military in ensuring that freedom is upheld?
I think so, absolutely. The military doesn't get everything right. Those that lead us certainly don't. But even when military actions or military intervention go wrong, disastrously wrong, there are still valid counterfactual analysis that non-intervention would have been just as bloody or even worse. You only have to sort of, you know, we try in the military, we try in all sorts of ways to sort of untangle the knot of personal morality and military necessity and political responsibility all the time when it comes to using the force of military for good, whether it's to free people or defend people or rescue people. Orwell said of pacifism, that those who abjure violence can only do so because others are willing to do violence on their part. That is the stark truth which history, and especially perhaps Jewish history, has taught us. You know, the military exists to achieve and to maintain a monopoly over violence and to apply that monopoly in certain places at certain times. But when it's done correctly, as it should be, it means that in those places, at that time and in the future, there is also defence and there is rescue and there is building and there is repair as well. And the other significance, I think, of Passover at this time for the military is that we didn't quite spend 40 years wandering around the deserts, but we did spend almost two decades in both Iraq and Afghanistan wandering around complaining about our leaders. I don't get any more Jewish than that.
Well, Dan, I think that's a wonderful way to end. Dan Fox, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you very much. Pleasure being here.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast, an Anu community project. The Home Seder service has been an integral part of Jewish community and Jewish family life. To find out more about this series and listen to other interviews, just go to mysederguest.com. To explore Anu, go to anumuseum.org.il. Thank you to all of our guests for sharing their stories and being so generous with their time.